Spawn. I'm Kate Remington with Jason Graves. Hey, it is so much fun to have a chance to talk with you again.
Woohoo! It's so nice to be back, Kate. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, thanks. And, you know, last time we talked, it was about your soundtrack for Far Cry Primal and how you used bones and rocks and animal heartbeats and, I don't know,
dirt.
Did we ever settle the question of whether there were some human sacrifices involved, too? I mean...
Definitely sacrifices on my own part. That's for sure.
I'll bet
it. My poor fingers.
But your new soundtrack is for an Oculus Rift game called Farlands. And honestly, it just could not be more different. It's relaxing and it's fun. And were you working on this at the same time that you were doing Primal?
You know, you said relaxing, which is the one word I'd never had any developer list in the description part of what they wanted for the music. And as soon as they said that, my eyes lit up. I was meeting with them and we were in talks a lot and kind of going through the creative process just by talking about what maybe would work. But the needle didn't drop on that until basically like the last couple of weeks of Far Cry. So it was a nice transition.
Yeah, kind of like coming out into the sunshine after dealing with
the
woolly mammoths.
Like, yeah, exactly. Finally hitting the surface of the water and getting some breath. I mean, Far Cry was so much fun, don't get me wrong, but it was definitely a lot of fast-paced, fast pulse racing kinds of cues. So to go from all of that to just super relaxing, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 minute long songs where I can just like write a tune. It was really fun.
Yeah, well, it's fun to listen to, too. I haven't played Farlands yet because I don't have an Oculus setup, but just, you know, having it around, driving around in the car, it is. It's really relaxing. It's got so many layers to it. And it must have been fun to kind of play with the layers and get all of these kind of nuanced, almost sort of shimmers going on.
That's a great observation. It was definitely something that was not... The music wasn't written as game music, quote unquote, per se. I delivered lots of individual instruments and stems, and we did talk about interactivity. It's not that it's not being used the way you could, you know, to its maximum potential in the game. But from a composition standpoint, you know, they had a lot under their belts that they were trying to take care of between launching a brand new platform plus all the games that were going to be on there. And then on top of that, they're developing a game. So I sort of took advantage of them not paying too much attention to me and just wrote. I mean, it was kind of like Tom Smerton, the audio director I've worked with before a couple of different times, both for Oculus and when he was at another company years ago in Seattle. So we've got a relationship, and a lot of it was just him waving his hand saying, do something that you think will work and I'll let you know what I think. And as time went on, I just kept writing longer and longer songs because I was enjoying those layers that you're talking about and having them, like you listen to the song almost as if the game's playing back and changing the music a little bit. It builds up and it gets quiet and there's a little bit of a B section and then the beginning comes back in, but in a different way. And it's like I wrote the music thinking, let's pretend like the game engine's playing an interactive score, and then that's what it's going to sound like. And that gives them a lot of choice, too, once I break down all the parts of where they want to put different pieces of the song and how they want the song to play back.
we should back up maybe a little bit and talk about the game, because I'm not sure how many people have actually seen Farlands, but basically you're beamed down to this planet, and there are all of these really fantastic kind of creatures, and you have to make friends with them and feed them and keep them happy with toys. And as I was watching it, it sort of struck me that, well, maybe it's like a typical day at your house with
Yeah, right. Just substitute the space creatures for sugar gliders and hedgehogs and prairie dogs, and yeah, it probably is very similar. It's almost like like an Animal Crossing in space sort of thing, where it's definitely not a shooter. It's definitely not solving a mystery or anything like that. It's more observation. And the way Animal Crossing works, because my kids play it and they love it, you know, depending on the time of year that you play the game's reflecting that time. And it's the exact same thing in Farlands. So you go different days, you see different creatures out at different times, and you really can't see the whole, you can't beat the game, quote unquote, beat it in a day, because it's spread out over a much longer period of time, and you visit the way you would if you were actually there.
Which is so cool. And so did you create kind of different sounding identities for the different areas that you go and explore and find the creatures?
There were some general guidelines that Tom sent me. What we ended up focusing on the most, because there was a lot of ground to cover, and they could sit, you know, a player could sit and do just kind of one observation state for almost an indefinite amount of time if they wanted to. Hmm. So it seemed like the music was better served focusing more on the time of day and the location, with the time of day being the first thing we concerned ourselves with. And it was a very general sort of idea. Daytime was a little more active and nighttime was a little less active, you know, a little quieter. So some of the tunes have a sort of sleepy kind of feel, and those are the nighttime ones. The daytime ones are a little more upbeat and poppy. And Tom and the rest of the audio team at Oculus were placing things, geographically speaking, kind of how they felt certain things worked. There was a lot of trust involved, as my favorite relationships usually end up being, because they were trusting me to deliver what they thought would work in the end, and I trusted them to put it in the right places. So it was lots of communication, of course. We knew what everybody was doing, but we couldn't really overplan or pre-plan too much, because a lot of it came together at the last minute.
Well, yeah, and it had a really short development time, too. I read just like 8 months from...
Yes.
Yeah, which is amazing. Probably... Yep. A big change for you, because you're used to working on games that have like a couple of years before they see the light of day, right?
They had to crunch, but they were really excited about the game. I visited them when I went to PAX Seattle last August or September, mm-hmm. and that was when I first met with some of the folks, and we were kind of brainstorming a little bit. But in a lot of ways, if it's handled correctly, if you have someone like Tom at the helm, who knows what he's doing and knows who to trust, and people trust him to make the right decisions, everything goes fine when you're under a crunch like that. It's when people are second guessing everyone and no one really trusts anybody else and their corrections left and right and everything ends up being late. I haven't had that experience for a long time, but that's more of the beginner sort of mentality where the seasoned team, you know, they let everyone fulfill their own responsibilities. And in my opinion, it ends up being a better experience because everyone's looking out for everyone else in the best possible way.
And then everybody kind of shares the responsibility too for making it just the best game that they can make. So no one's
exactly
like trying to undermine anybody or that kind of thing. I know that you have worked really, really hard to create a unique identity for your games, no matter what kind of game you're working on. And it sounds like sometimes that involves crafting, you know, like in a game where you find a stick and a feather and then you could make an arrow in the game. And you do that too. And I was really amused to read that in Farlands, you actually used some mixing bowls as part of the instruments.
Absolutely. Mixing bowls and wine glasses. I had two different sets of mixing bowls, actually, because they're all different sizes and they all make different pitches. And we've talked about this before, but just being a drummer and looking, it's just so much easier to find sounds in the real world that are different and unique than it is to try to go into the computer, because once you're in the computer, you're already limited to what other people have found in the real world. And it would be one thing if I only played, I'm not going to pick an instrument so people think I'm dogging it, you know, something else, like a wind instrument, for say. I can't pick up a mixing bowl and play it if I'm trying to blow it somehow the way I would blow a saxophone or a trombone. But being a percussionist, I can kind of bang on anything. And I did use the computer to get some of those things in tune because there are lots of crazy overtones and things like that. I tuned the wine glasses and the dulcimers and the steel drums and all the ukuleles and things. Those were all tuned. But the mixing bowls I needed to tune in the computer. And it's just so dead easy now. You play what I want, grab the notes, and just say I want all those to be a C. And then it snaps and sounds like what hopefully is kind of an alien, unrecognizable yet familiar sort of thing. What they wanted was something that sounded alien and futuristic, but not in a sci-fi sort of way. They wanted to be organic and sci-fi at the same time, kind of.
Yeah, and you totally nailed it. And that's interesting about being able to tune them in the computer, because I had visions of you at Williams-Sonoma, you know, like tapping on the mixing bowls to get the ones that were the right tones.
Just like I did with the clay pots at the hardware store. Well, the mixing bowls, I just ordered three sets off of Amazon, like the biggest sets that I could find. Same thing with the whisks and some other kitchen utensils. It's great. Just, you know, it's $100 from Amazon. It shows up the next day, and then it's just like Christmas, and you're unwrapping all these things and setting them up, and it's just so much more fun than I'm going to buy this new sample pack of fill in the blank.
Oh, sure. Because then you can really craft whatever you want. I mean, you can do that with samples too, but it's so much more fun, it sounds like, to do it with real things. And then it has a completely different sound.
And everything that I hit it with, it really does sound completely different. So sometimes I'm using little wire brushes and it's very soft. And other times I'm using some of these whisks, which it just looks like a balloon whisk, a metal whisk, but it's got lots of little harder brushes that I can tap, or I'll use like a wooden dowel or something. And each one, depending on how you hit it, maybe you're hitting the side of the bowl with a rubber mallet and it's a very round, warm sound, or you're tapping the top rim with a wooden dowel and it's a ting, 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 a much more metallic, percussive, less pitched sounds. I mean, I think I got like four different kind of instrument categories just out of those bowls, depending on what I hit them with.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to hear, you know, the 10 tracks, then the difference in the sounds and kind of the timbres and stuff. And if I didn't know they were mixing bowls, I wouldn't know that they were mixing bowls.
But what would you think they are? Because it's like, it's not a marimba. It's not a xylophone. They just...
Yeah.
I don't know what they sound. They sound like... In my head, they sound like some unknown ethnic percussion from some country that I'm just not familiar with the instrument. Or outer space. Let's just say they sound like outer space percussion, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That was the idea.
This spring, you gave a presentation at a conference about being an army of one as a composer. And I think it's really neat that this is possible to do, but there've got to be some challenges with that, right?
All those hats that you have to wear, for sure. I mean, just management of all the tasks. The general idea of that talk, I know in film and in TV especially, things have to get done really, really quickly, and there's multiple projects going on, and the composers that are busy have teams of folks that help them. And I feel like for people getting into the industry, or they maybe been doing music for a while and they're thinking that something in games or TV or film would be really fun to work in, and they start doing their research and you realize that there's literally 15 people working on this score and it had to be done in such a short amount of time, and there can be some disappointment in that, where it's like, how can I do something like that when I'm just working by myself? And I've always worked by myself, not necessarily because I had to. I just never really thought about the other options. I think part of it is being in North Carolina. I can't just call someone and have them come over and do something in the computer for me. I'm sort of isolated in that regard. But it also has forced me to learn how microphones work, or to learn the best orchestration, or to learn how to mix something the way I like the way it sounds. And I really thrive on that, on learning new things. And it seems like every job is a new opportunity to figure out, well, how do I play these mixing bowls and make them sound like they're in key? And I have a day to just experiment with the recording. And I love doing things like that. And in a way, for me, everything is sort of the sum is greater than the whole of its parts, or whatever that phrase is. Like, every piece snowballs and adds to everything else. So I'm taking ideas that I sort of discovered on my own and using them in different ways. It's just fun for me, but it is a time crunch, because you have to do everything. And in my head, I'm always thinking, oh, jack of all trades, master of none. You know, I wish I had more time to just go to like mixing school or sit with an engineer for a couple of weeks and see what they do. I'm sort of the school of hard knock life in a way. Oh, wait a minute. Do you like what I did there? The school of hard knock life.
I get that, yeah.
It's a hard knock life for music. That's just the kind of thing that I know, and that's my reality. And the frustration is, I feel like I wish I had more time to learn about just focus on microphone techniques or fill in the blank. But I think that's probably the curse of the creatively frustrated composer anyway.
Well, and the thing is, I have found this with riding, with training my horse in dressage. Once you start on that path, then you realize how much you don't know.
Yes.
And then you're really like trying to play catch up. But you're right. I mean, there's just not enough time to kind of pull it all together. And so it's just, you know, little by little baby steps, I guess, each time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, my inspiration is, I'm looking at people that do what I'm trying to do that inspire me. So if it's mixing, I'm looking at Sean Murphy or Alan Meyerson, and I'm listening to their stuff with my mouth open thinking, I can never make it sound that good, but by golly, I'm going to try as hard as I can to figure out how to make it work. And I think I would probably be disappointed if I did something and thought, yep, that's it. That sounds amazing. It could never sound any better than this. It's usually like, well, that's as good as I can make it sound right now, and it needs to go in the game, so I'm finished and and I'm moving on, which is good. If I didn't have deadlines, I'd still be working on my first game from, you know, 15 years ago. No, wait, I could just get it a little better. Give me another week.
I heard that from so many people that their biggest source of inspiration is a deadline, because it's got to get done, and so that's it. Time out. You know, game over.
Yep.
So, well, now you've moved, or you're in the process of moving and designing a new studio. So, what are you adding to the new studio that you didn't have in the old one? I mean, what have you decided that you can't live without, and what are you adding that's going to make life even better?
More space, really, more than anything else. I was physically constricted because of an old building that was here that we tore down, and it ended up being, you know, the whole building ended up being about 8 feet short, but it's a, you know, 50 or 60 foot wide building, so we lost a lot of space there, and the ceilings needed to be lower because of the restrictions of historic neighborhoods and things like that. It's a fantastic space. It's just a small space. And everything I record is right here in my room. The drums are upstairs, but I'd love to have a proper tracking room, a nice big one, so I can have a piano in there and a drum set and have the marimba out, get some timpani, the kind of percussion stuff that I love to do. And just more room in general. I'm literally, my assistant Thomas and I are stepping on top of each other most of the time. Or like face-to-face, like you're on an airplane trying to pass someone between the seats. It's like, oops, wait, sorry, oh, wait. But see, we're standing in the kitchen. It's just the kitchen's so small, there's no room for us. So it's space. All the gear that I've got is going with me, and it's just going to be a matter of having to come to terms with the fact that my new desk will have extra empty rack space in it, and that's never a good thing for a composer / engineer. I filled all my racks up about a year ago, and it was like, okay, that's it. There's physically no more space. I can't buy any more outboard equipment. And now, now there will be more room for more equipment.
Yeah, well, it's and that's a great thing, because I'm sure there's all kinds of toys, you know, being developed every single month that you think you can't live without, because they're going to give you, I don't know, some extra new way to make amazing sounds.
It gets really easy to feel like that, especially in the computer with all the crazy power you have. A plugin that you turn one knob and it's doing like 20 things behind the scenes that you can't even really fathom, because it's so complicated. But I'm definitely more of a purist when it comes to using the computer for things. But I think that part of that is just my source. I'm recording things, and I like the idea. It's for each game. So for Farlands, it wasn't like we wanted crazy psychedelic sci-fi. It wanted to be grounded analog sci-fi. So in my head, that, you know, find some interesting things to play, or play things different ways in the real world, and then put them in the computer and let the computer just make it sound like a really great recording. I had a little bit of reverb on some things and some delays, but most of it was the source. Again, now we're going back to, I'd rather have my electric guitar plugged into all my pedals and experimenting with sounds than trying to keep up with all the plugins that come out. There might be another game where it needs to be like really messed up and psychedelic, or super dirty and gritty and kind of chopped up. Then you're looking at the computer, because you're trying to find these unnatural sort of effects. It's like everything has its place, right?
Yeah. And who knows what's around the corner? I mean, because like a couple of weeks ago, you were at an undisclosed location talking about writing music for an unnamed studio. And, you know, I'm so curious about that process. Is there anything you can talk about without revealing any secrets about, you know, what it's like when you're meeting with a studio about a game that has yet to be made?
It's amazingly exciting with every new project because everyone just has so much energy. And by the time I'm brought in, it's hopefully still early. And I mean, there's still concept art coming online. And what I love, my experience for maybe the last 5 or 6 years has been a complete collaboration. It's not like I walk in and they're like, okay, so here's what we need these pieces of music, and this is the style guide, and here's what we kind of the emotions that we're looking for. There's never anything like that. They're literally just showing me the game. This is why I love to go visit developers anyway, because when they're in the beginning stages, doesn't matter who the developer is or how big the budget is, they all have presentations put together. You know, the creative director has a presentation. The character design guys have presentations. The music audio team is going to have a presentation. And I never have to ask, because when I show up, and this is from Dead Space to Tomb Raider to anything, there's a whole day or two spent on and off just sitting through these presentations. And it's amazing because you're in the room with the creative director and they're doing their slideshow and you can talk about it and ask questions, and it has nothing to do with the music, but it has everything to do with the music, because they're not concerned about the music I'm going to write. They're concerned, not concerned, but they're passionate, and they're trying to convey like why they're so excited about this game in a way that they, you know, creative directors, kind of the plot and the arc, the animation guys talking about how everyone's going to move and how these creatures are going to do things. And that all gets reflected back when I finally come, you know, months later and start sending music in, that I'm sitting at the keyboard. I'm remembering all of these presentations, or even better, they send them to me. I'm flicking through them in Keynote or in, you know, presentation software and seeing the movies that they showed me. And you know these folks too. So you can, it's just so cool because we're all making this really neat thing that no one's done before. And every little thing that we almost take for granted, seeing the way a creature moves, I mean, this creature is made up, like in Farlands, you have no idea what its locomotion would be. And there's people there and they've got all these sketches and pictures of different animals all around their desk. And they're watching these little like GIFs of different animals, like horses is a big thing because their legs are so long and they're really big and they can, you know, they have so many different ways of speed, trotting or galloping or walking. And that's just stuff just fascinates me because that's what we're doing for music. We're just doing it with sounds instead of these other things. So that's what it's like. It's like a big family reunion in a way. And they always, I feel so welcome and appreciated, because just as much as they're telling me things every 5 minutes, you know, do you have any questions or what do you think about this? And with the audio team, you know, what do you think we could do to make the music better? How should we implement it? I mean, you know, what were your feelings the way the music was put in on X game? How did you guys make that one thing where the music did this? And it's all about making the best game possible. There's no ego. There's no, you know, this is my domain. Don't tell me how to make a gun sound or whatnot. It's so collaborative. I could talk forever. Obviously I get excited about it because that's my favorite thing to do. You're working with real people and it just makes all the difference in the world.
It must be like, you know, building a new house and there's all these possibilities. Yeah. And nothing's off the table until you actually get in and you realize, well, you know, maybe we're not going to be able to do that, or maybe we're going to have to cut out some of the parts. But yeah, that sounds like just a really, really exciting time when everybody's like just super jazzed and the sky's the limit.
It is. It really is.
There's been a lot of talk. I'm friends with people who are involved with symphony orchestras around here in the area, and they're all, you know, kind of looking over their shoulders, wondering, well, where's the next audience going to come from? And I know that when you started in music school, you're in music education, and you still go back and talk to kids about music from time to time. Are you doing presentations in schools?
Absolutely, as much as I can.
Well, that is just so cool, because that alone must get them so excited about music and realizing what the possibilities are.
Definitely, so. And they're just like wide-eyed and mouths hanging open. And I try to bring as many physical instruments as I can. And I apologize to all the band directors beforehand because, you know, I'm not playing them. I'm intentionally playing them the wrong way. And the point isn't, you know, don't practice, kids. The point is music can come from anywhere. And practice your saxophone, practice your trumpet, enjoy being in band. That's what I did. But you're not restricted to that, just like you're not restricted to even writing music. You know, you can be a performer, you can be on the audio team, you can go into anything you want, whatever creatively inspires you. But I think it's important for, especially these are middle school kids mostly that I went and saw, it's important for them to have like see a real person who worked on a game, because it's so abstract. Right, you just see these boxes in the picture and the screen you're going to download off Steam, and to have someone there, it'd be like if I were in middle school and got to see people that actually worked in film or TV, whatever they did. Oh yeah, I worked on that TV show. It's like, wow, it physically happens with people. It just doesn't magically appear, and it takes a lot of work, but it also takes a lot of passion. And I always get them up on stage to play things and to kind of to jam a little bit. And, you know, music should be fun, if not anything else. I mean, practicing is fine and important, but my band director was the same way. He always made sure that we had fun. His was one of the first schools that I ended up going to anyway. It's just, yeah, that's just how I was brought up. So I love to be able to share it when I can.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. And I think also, you know, the real value of games, I mean, the thing that's really happening now and in the games that you've done is that as you're playing, you get exposed to all of these amazing sounds, you know, choral music that sounds like it's from the 19th century and Aztec death whistles and all of these things that, you know, it's kind of like this whole tangential learning part of games that really kind of gets, it doesn't get the credit that it deserves, because I think games can do more than just, you know, let you run around and shoot people. And there's so much more to them now. And so it seems like one of the real values is that you get to hear all this amazing music.
I completely agree. And that goes back to the folks that I was talking about working with. They're just so amazingly open to different suggestions and different ideas. And I have yet to have anyone either, like I said before, give me a specific style guide, but a lot of the conversations usually end with, well, I'm trying to push the envelope a little bit and really want to do something different. So when I go too far, just tell me and we'll pull back. Like, my job is to basically go too far and you're like, oh, okay, that's a little too much. Let's pull back. And they always say, sure. And they never pull me back. Anyone has yet to ever have said it. And, you know, as the game keeps kind of progressing and more work is going on the table and I keep sending more stuff and I feel more comfortable and just keep pushing the envelope, and they're like, this is great. And they just enjoy it. The more original and sort of new experience that the music can give the players, the happier the developers are.
Oh man. Does it ever get hard to not talk about it? I mean, because obviously you're so excited about it, and yet it's going to be probably at least a couple of years before anyone will hear this except for you and the studio. And I don't know, I'm just wondering, is it really hard to keep it a secret sometimes?
It was for maybe the first 10 years. And then after about 10 years, then it became really hard for me to do interviews because I was so used to not talking about the project. When they finally came out, my brain the whole time was going, shut up, shut up, shut up. It's like, oh, no, I'm allowed to talk. Oh, shut up, shut up, shut up. So that was about the last 5 years. And now it's just sort of all a bit of a, I think I've sort of absorbed it into my subconscious. And either I don't talk about it, you know, or I do. But it does. Look, it's difficult sometimes as keeping track of which one has come out and which one hasn't, or which one has been announced that I'm working on and maybe I can mention that on social media, or which one hasn't, but the game has been announced, but my involvement, you know, there's a lot of shades of gray in there. That's why I have a publicist.
Well, again, you know, okay, so now we've got something else to look forward to. And as always, it has been just, wow, so much fun having a chance to talk with you. And I know we'll have a chance to catch up again soon. But Jason, thank you so much.
Oh, it's totally my pleasure, as usual. Thank you for all the very insightful and interesting questions.